you know you can listen to Superhuman Radio while mobile? That's right. Go to the iPhone store and download the free Shoutcast app and then search for the Superhuman channel.
The following paid program does not necessarily reflect the views or opinions of the staff and management of TriSceptor Productions or the Superhuman Channel. TriSceptor Productions and the Superhuman Channel are not responsible for any claims, warranties, or guarantees made during this program.
Prepare to experience the strongest radio allowable by law. Secrets will be revealed. Myths dispelled.
From the Studio Gym, where excuses never apply.
It's Superhuman Radio with your host, Carl Lenore.
Hey, welcome back to another episode of Superhuman Radio. We've got a great discussion planned today as the gentleman who I believe has been identified as really starting what has become this Paleolithic movement, which is an industry unto itself today. Dr. Boyd Eaton is joining us today. How you doing, Dr. Eaton?
Hey, I'm fine, Carl. How about yourself?
Good, good. Let's start at the very, very beginning. I've heard about you numerous times from Dr. Lauren Cordain, who's a great friend of the show, and Dr. Cordain has been on the show. The show's been on the air for 8 years, and Dr. Cordain started coming on the show early 2006 when we started to really start talking about the importance of ancestral diets. And he would always talk to me on the air and off the air about you. He would always credit you with giving him his start in this area. What made you, how did you even become interested in looking at ancestral diets to begin with?
Well, I have always had a very great interest from childhood on in anthropology and paleontology. All little children practically are interested in cavemen and savages across the world and that sort of thing. And as you become more sophisticated and get learn a little bit more, you can become better informed about the lives of these people. When I got to be in my late 30s, I began to think about some of the things that are the focus of your program, that is health and well-being and disease prevention and longevity and things of that sort. And I began reading the public health recommendations. And at the same time, I was reading descriptions of the lifestyle of our ancestors, and it occurred to me that these were very similar. And then finally, the light went on to say that what the public health people and folks interested in health promotion are doing is recreating the wheel, where they're trying by means of scientific investigation and epidemiological experiment to determine what we should do when what we really should do is what our ancestors did, because that's what we're genetically designed to do.
Yeah, and you know what? I have, when I first started doing the show 8 years ago, I used to have scientists on the show to let them talk about their research. And I put a lot of stock in epidemiology. But as time went on, I have lost my trust of epidemiology. And in fact, I tend to depend on my critical thinking skills. And if something in research does not play out in real life, I abandon it. I don't give all science its credible appreciation simply because it's coming out of good scientific environments any longer. Because, and to steal something that I actually heard Dr. Cordain say for the first time close to 8 years ago on this show, you know, if you believed in epidemiology, then you believe fire trucks start fires, because every time there's a fire, there are fire trucks there. And so I think
that's sort of an unfair criticism. I love Lauren a great deal, but that's silliness. But the I'll tell you what is interesting. I'm looking at a paper that was sent to me by a friend just recently. It's in a journal called the Journal of Clinical Lipidology, and there are people in the authorship of this from major universities all across the country and the world, for that matter. And they're discussing the role of fatty acids in coronary heart disease, basically.
Right.
And they, there's this long, long paper. It's all full of epidemiological data. And in the end, what it says is, well, everything we've done so far is internally contradictory and it is inconclusive, and millions of dollars have been spent on these studies, and they have really gotten us nowhere. Whereas if you just started out by saying we're designed to eat and act and exercise in the same pattern that our ancestors were, you know, 50,000 years ago, you could have arrived at the more conclusive recommendations than all this epidemiological study has come up with at great expense.
Right. No, and I agree. And really, that's what I was getting at when I was kind of thumbing my nose at epidemiology. It's almost, that's why I say I'm a big proponent of critical thinking. You know, when somebody tells me fat is bad for you, I simply ask them, then how did we get here today when we've had hundreds of years of people? I mean, I remember my grandmother would render the bacon fat and keep it in a jar on the back of her stove and then ladle it out like ice cream back into a frying pan and cook with it again. And they would make it.
That is so funny. I can tell you about my mother's story. She grew up on a farm, a subsistence farm. They would milk the cows, bring the milk in, and set it in this great big basin they had. And then if you do that, the cream rises to the top. And she and her sisters would go and they would take spoons and eat the cream right off the top, and she said it was a consistency between heavy whipping cream and actual butter.
Oh,
it was
wow.
Heavier than anything you could get in the store now. And she herself and three sisters all lived to be over 90.
Bingo. And I just had this discussion this morning. I keep hearing from people, well, we're living longer today. And I say, no, we're not. We've had people live into their eighth and ninth and even 10th decade of life ongoing for the past several hundreds of years, as long as time has been recorded. If we were living longer, we would have people living to 150, 160. Now, granted, the population is larger, so we have more people living into those ages. But the other thing that pulled the numbers down back then is a lot of women gave birth and died during birthing, and the children died during birthing. And when you look at the averages, you go, oh, the average age was 56 then. No. If you lived past 14, 15, 16 years old, you generally lived into your 6th, 7th, 8th, and even 9th decade of life. No different than we do today. Is that an unfair statement, Dr. Eaton?
Well, it hits the kernel of the truth, and that is that the big difference in average life expectancy has to do with the large percentage of little children who died. If you have a person who lives to be 70 and a child who dies in the first year of life, then their average life expectancy for the two people is 35 years. And that is what people don't understand when they hear stories about average life expectancy.
Right. Right. Okay. So now let's look back. When you first started doing this with ancestral nutrition and you started to stumble upon the importance and the benefits of it, did you have any idea that it would become what it is today?
No.
What did you think?
I think
then?
That the reason it's become what it is, the trajectory of what has happened is quite different from what I expected. What I expected was that when we wrote a paper that was so clear-cut and so straightforward that we would shift the paradigm of medical thinking. But the actual situation was that the people involved in obtaining research grants, in granting funding for research, for running departments, for selecting articles and editing articles in major journals and so forth, have been so invested in their own position that they were very resistant to a substantial change. So that there hasn't been the impact on formal academic medicine that I had hoped.
Uh-huh.
What I did not understand or have any appreciation of, and I think that most people, our article came out in 1988, and I think most people had the same blank spot that I did then, and I had no idea about the value of social media in terms of disseminating information of this sort. And I greatly credit Lauren and bloggers like Rob Wolf
yeah.
Mark Sisson and people like that who have many others. I don't mean to leave anybody out, but a large number of people who have got this information out in a very responsible way, not like a simple fad, but actually presenting the data back and forth and have influenced a large number of people by that means, rather than by writing articles that would appear in prestigious academic journals.
You know, Before we go into this break, I'm going to ask you this question because I want to get it out of the way up front before we go further down this road. I had a nice discussion with Leslie Aiello once, about 3 years ago maybe. She's with the Wennergren Foundation, and they...
Oh, yes, I know.
Yeah, and she's never wanted to come on my show, but she's been very gracious about the time that she has given me on the phone when I've had questions for her. And she once said to me, she said, Carl, you know, it really isn't possible for people to eat a truly paleo diet any longer because the food has changed so dramatically. And she pointed out that apples were not what we think they are today back then. They were little green, you know, bulbs of bitterness, and they weren't, you know, we've actually changed the food. What is your opinion of that? Is it possible to eat a truly paleo style diet today, or have we diverged so far in the food chain that really it's really no real possibility at all?
Well, you're about to go to break, and I'd love to talk on that point. The answer is she's quite right. The foods have changed immensely, but you can still come pretty close to approximating what the basics of an ancestral diet would have been.
Okay, let's do this. Let's take this break, and when we come back, we're going to pick this discussion up further. We're talking with Dr. Boyd Eaton. If you are considered a paleo guru in your circle of friends and you don't know who Dr. Boyd Eaton is, shame on you. Stay tuned. We'll be right back. Products that I believe in the way I believe in CanSee eye drops. I've been using CanSee for 6 months now, and the changes in my vision are nothing short of amazing. My near vision has improved, and I can read small print from 8 inches. My overall vision is clearer, and the glare from oncoming headlights doesn't bother me any longer. Just 1 to 2 drops a day, and the results are visible. You can find CanSee eye drops at wisechoicemedicine.net or call 800-861-4936. That's 800-861-4936. wisechoicemedicine.net. CanSee eye drops. The name says it all.
Mass Pro Synthogen is unlike any supplement to come before it, both in form and function. Synthogen is the world's first messenger RNA translation accelerator. Messenger RNA is the rate-limiting step in growing new muscle. Synthogen rapidly stimulates protein synthesis on demand, day or night. Synthogen allows you to train harder, longer, stronger, and more frequently than your competition. Synthogen is the absolute fastest drug-free recovery agent available. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Synthogen banner ad to learn more. Mass Pro Synthogen. When you train with it, you'll gain with it.
Orbit Nutrition carries over 1,000 of the hottest nutritional supplements, performance enhancers, and nutraceuticals on the planet. And now, Superhuman Radio listeners get an additional 5% off their everyday low prices by using the coupon code SHR5. That's SHR and the number 5. Choose from products like Quest Protein Bars, iForce Nutrition, Iron Mag Labs, and more. Check out Orbit's daily deals for special insane blowout prices. Log on to the Orbit Nutrition Forum and get feedback about the products you're shopping for and get an additional 5% off using the coupon code SHR5. Orbit Nutrition. Fast, reliable, competitive, international. Why shop anywhere else? I usually avoid protein bars because they're generally just candy in disguise. But that's all changed now. With Quest Protein Bars, we can enjoy dessert again without the guilt. With 20 grams of whey isolate protein, tons of prebiotic fiber, no sugar added, and only 2 to 6 grams of active carbohydrates per bar, Quest Bars will keep you full and lean. I've never endorsed a protein bar before because I simply didn't trust them. That's all changed with the Quest Bar. Not just because of what's in them, but more so for what's not. Go to superhumanradio.com today and click the Quest Protein Bar banner ad. Start enjoying dessert again. Thousands of Superhuman Radio listeners already know how well GLC 2000 works at repairing joints and cartilage, and it's the best price on the market, milligram for milligram. Now GLC Direct is offering a special that my listeners can take advantage of. Buy one, get one free of any GLC 2000 product. That's right, buy one of your favorite GLC 2000 products and get one free. Capsules or raw powder. Just mention Superhuman Radio and buy one, get one free today. Call 866-452-3473 or click the GLC banner ad on superhumanradio.com. Offer limited to one per household.
Summer is here. You need help quick. You need the 21-Day Beach Body Challenge from 21dayfit.com. Want muscle? Want chiseled abs? Want to feel great about your body? Then go to 21dayfit.com today and get the results you want in 21 days. From body of work icon Sean Phillips to you, this results-driven 21-minute program for 21 days gives you foolproof success, and it's free. Go to 21dayfit.com and start today, and your abs are on the way. That's the number 21dayfit.com, and download the Summer Supercharger immediately.
Get stronger. Feel younger. It's Superhuman Radio.
Welcome back to Superhuman Radio. We're talking this hour with Dr. Boyd Eaton. Really, the first person to really start talking about the benefits of ancestral diets, which has blossomed into a complete and entire industry unto itself, the paleo industry. We're going to talk about some funny things about that in a short moment. Let's get back to what we were talking about. So you feel that it's quite it's realistic to reach a paleolithic style of diet in this day and age, even though the foods have changed. Does it take some work? For instance, wouldn't grass-fed beef be one of the prescriptive foods as opposed to grain-fed, corn-fed beef?
Well, grass-fed beef is closer to the original. The original aurochs, you know, beef are the descent. Beef cattle are descendants of aurochs. Aurochs were a little bit larger and very, very mean, but they were primarily forest-dwelling animals and ate a lot of stuff from twigs and branches and leaves that you can find in forests, not so much grass. They weren't out in the prairies like antelope or animals of that sort. But grass-fed is certainly a lot better than corn-fed, for sure.
Okay. Now, let's talk a little bit about some of the, let's call them diversions that have occurred as the paleo movement moves forward. We have lots of people who are publishing paleo cookbooks, and a lot of them have things like, well, they replaced grain flours with coconut flour and breading their cauliflower before they deep fry it. This is a complete deviation from the paleo nutrition that you talk about, isn't it?
I have some friends who have put out cookbooks, and on the whole, I admire what they're doing, but I do think that if you were going to go in a strong form paleo approach, then deep frying something would not be a good idea, nor breading. So that I think you have the same approach, and that is that there is a weak form of the paleo approach as far as eating is concerned, and there's a strong form. To me, the weak form is for people who have don't have a identifiable health problem that they're concerned about and who are able to maintain the biomarkers that they are aiming for. Mm-hmm. And if you can do that with the weak form paleo approach, more power to you. On the other hand, if you have a disease condition or health problem that is intractable under those circumstances, or if your biomarkers are not the way you'd like them to be, then you can go to the strong form paleo, which has more therapeutic benefit, in my opinion, but is necessary for people in that second category,
right?
Not so much for people in the first category.
Yeah, and so, and let's face it, compliance becomes an issue with anything. If you expect people to eat cardboard just because it's healthy, some may do it, but the majority won't, even though they know that it's good for them. So you have to make things palatable. But the only cautionary statement I would make is the reason we are where we are today with nutrition is because we've allowed flavor to drive what we put in our mouth. And subsequently, then foods start to morph into things that are not necessarily very good for us. And you have to be cautious about, you know, how much you want to gussy up a food or dish in order to make it palatable. And it starts to deviate further and further from the original goal, which is to return to a more ancestral diet. With that being said, an interesting conversation I had with an advertiser who's no longer advertising. He started a new website and he was doing some great things with it, but it wasn't picking up as fast as he wanted it to. So he hired this marketing team from out of New York, and they came back and they said, look, shut your website down, shut everything down, and give us about 4 months. We're going to bring everything back up. We're just going to call it paleo. So they're changing the name of the product line. They're including the name Paleo in the products. The word Paleo is going to appear in the website and in the URL. There is an undercurrent right now of people who would profit simply by adding the word Paleo. Like, for instance, I've seen things that look like summer sausages, but they claim to be cavemen style foods. When, you know, cavemen didn't have sodium nitrate, you know, back then. It's what do you think about this undercurrent that's just kind of a parasite riding on the back of the whole ancestral diet movement?
It's the American way. It is. It's exactly what you'd expect, I think. If something seems to be successful, people who are interested in the paleo and movement and who are trying to promote a paleolithic approach to health should feel that we're being praised in a way, because
yes,
the advertisers have figured that this is something to catch on to. But I hope that programs like yours and blogs and articles and so forth that come out will show the difference. Clearly, one of a tremendous difference between ourselves and our ancestors is in the amount of sodium that we get.
Really?
Our ancestors were probably getting less than a gram of sodium a day, and they were getting far more potassium than sodium. So that while it's very difficult, given the foods we have available to us, to get your sodium down as low as our ancestors did, at the very least you can pick foods that will get your potassium substantially higher than your sodium as it comes in.
Interesting.
And for most Americans, it's just the reverse. Our sodium intake is greater than our potassium intake.
Now, why is that? Is that simply let's say I'm not eating a lot of processed foods, Dr. Eaton, am I still going to be exposed to higher levels of sodium? I've heard once that agriculture uses salt in the soil for some reason. Is that what we're talking about when we talk about the sodium?
No.
Okay.
No, you can do a great job if you're on the strong form of the paleo diet.
Right.
By just eating meats that are healthy meats, not ones that have been highly salted, but regular meat, and fruits and vegetables. That way you can recreate the acid-base balance and also the sodium-potassium balance that is pretty close to what our ancestors had.
Okay, now you talk about meats, and I'm a big proponent of eating pastured animal meats that, you know, animals that have lived a natural life, the life that they were, you know, chickens are not supposed to be vegetarians.
Absolutely.
They eat worms and
Absolutely.
Grubs, and they eat their own poop once in a while. And that's what they, you know, if you want a real chicken, that's what you're eating. So with that being said, meat gets a very, very unfair hit constantly by the forks over knives group and the vegetarian and vegan group constantly, and, you know, citing that meat is the devil and it's causing disease. And I always say, well, how could we have lived this long if that's true, when our ancestors thrived on meat? And until the 70s, at least, we ate meat a lot more than we do today. What do you talk about when people say to you, well, Dr. Eaton, what about the vegan diet?
Well, people who are vegetarians or vegans, for moral reasons, there's no way to put those people down, because they've got a heck of a good point on their side, and
right,
that is, and you mentioned it as well, I mean, raising pigs or cows or chickens or whatever in very inhumane circumstances is just absolutely wrong.
Yes.
So I would certainly support somebody who's a vegetarian or a vegan on moral grounds. On health grounds, I would disagree with them, because I think that meat has been a substantial portion of the human diet for at least 1 million years and probably almost 2 million years. And that's enough to affect the biochemical and metabolic processes that we all have, so that we are set up to eat meat. Now, when I say meat, I would go along with animal protein. I think that there's a lot of argument right now as to whether or not saturated fat is really as bad as people have said have thought it to be. But nevertheless, I think that the prudent person would sort of cut down on saturated fats, and that means having predominantly poultry or fish or shellfish or meats that are quite low in their fat content, and your grass-fed meat is way better than meat that's been fed corn and grains of various sorts.
And so, because of the fatty acid profile, not just the amount of fat, but the profile itself, the higher omega-3 ratio to omega-6 that's found in pastured beef versus grain-fed, corn-fed beef.
Well, that's quite true. If an animal is fed on corn, they end up with a fatty acid makeup that is way tilted towards omega-6s. We need omega-6s get a bad rap. We actually need omega-6s just as we need omega-3s, but we need them in a much closer balance than what is ordinarily obtained by Americans.
What about this notion I heard years ago, I'm trying to think what guest talked about it, that Paleolithicus gracilis and Paleolithicus robustus. Robustus was an exclusively vegan form, and gracilis was the one that started to use primitive tools to kind of eat the marrow from bones, and then slowly depended more and more on animal proteins. Their brain got larger, their digestive system got smaller, and they are what we are direct descendants from. Is there any truth to that?
Partly. Australopithecus robustus.
Are you still there, Dr. Eaton? Uh-oh. I think we may have lost Dr. Eaton. Here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to play a little music real quick and get him right back on the phone, so stay tuned. Hey, Dr. Eaton.
The names of these critters that you're talking about, it's a little bit wrong. Are we on the air now?
Yeah, now we are. Now we are. Okay. So the bottom line is Robustus extinct and gone because it was a vegan form, and Gracilis is what we have is a descendants from?
We are descended from animals or pre-human creatures that may or may not have been Australopithecus gracilis. They are thought to have been Homo erectus, and the Homo erectus and perhaps the habilis before them did shift over to a predominantly meat or largely meat diet. And as a result, they became much larger in their physical size. Homo habilis was about the size of a chimpanzee, and Homo erectus is about the size we are now. And that change took place over perhaps a half a million years and is thought to have taken place predominantly because of two factors. One is we shifted into eating more and more meat, and secondly, we probably developed fire, which enabled us to cook foods and obtain more calories per unit of food that we consumed.
Okay, I want to talk about that because amongst the more extreme paleo nutrition devotees, there is a raw food movement where they are eating lots of raw meat. So I want to talk about that just briefly when we come back from the break. We're talking with Dr. Boyd Eaton. We're talking about the current state of paleo. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
An aromatase inhibitor shown to be stronger than ATD and 6-oxo and a SERM to rival tamoxifen. Finally, muscle-building testosterone levels. Finally, Formax. Old-school testosterone boosters never did quite work that well because they fell short of critical levels of testosterone needed to build muscle. They only controlled estrogen. That's like flooring a gas pedal connected to a four-cylinder engine. No matter how hard you push, the engine isn't going to run any faster. Formax changes that by signaling each level of testosterone production, replacing your old four-cylinder with a supercharged V12. Get Formax. Go go to superhumanradio.com and click the Formex banner ad today.
AnabolicMinds.com is the premier website for credible information on building muscle, burning fat, supplementation, and more. With over 100,000 active registered members and over 2.5 million posts, it's one of the largest communities on the internet to get help and answers to your question. It's also the place that the official Superhuman Radio Forum is hosted. Visit AnabolicMinds.com today and get into the action. AnabolicMinds.com. Learn. Teach. Lead.
The ingredients in Bridge read like a who's who of hormones and natural compounds designed to increase muscle mass, focus, and libido so you can keep all your hard-earned muscle gains as you cycle off or diet down. Bridge is not fairy dust. Ingredients like Fatogea, Pregenolon, Phosphatidylserine, and Alpha-GPC ensure you maintain an anabolic environment while Uricoma, Longifolia, Murabuama, Lepidium Mayeni, and Resveratrol keep you feeling strong and focused just the way you were on cycle. Bridge is the most unique supplement on the market that works anytime. Check out Bridge today at needtobuildmuscle.net. Don't lose your gains. Bridge.
Eat dessert again with the new 100% natural line of high-protein, low-carb Quest protein bars. I love lemon cream pie and strawberry cheesecake, but you can choose from chocolate peanut butter, coconut cashew, or cinnamon roll as well. No matter which one you try, you'll feel like you're eating dessert. But this is no ordinary dessert. With 20 grams of high-quality whey protein isolate, 17 grams of prebiotic fiber, and sweetened with stevia, these bars will make you feel like you're cheating, but you're not. Go to superhumanradio.com. And click the Quest Protein Bar banner ad to learn more about these clean and delicious protein bars.
You already know how great the Testo 100 Transdermal Testosterone Boosting Patch is. Well, now it's even better. The new and improved Testo 100 patch now contains D-aspartic acid, stinging nettle root, and androstenotrione to increase free testosterone while reducing sex hormone binding globulin and aromatase enzyme. It's still made in FDA-certified labs and contains all the great ingredients that made it work originally. But now it's even better. Bypassing the stomach to deliver its ingredients throughout the day for greater increases in energy, libido, and muscle-building, fat-burning effects. Get 50% off when you use the coupon code SHR4. Go to AGEFORCE.com and use the coupon code SHR4 and get your new Testo 100 patch today. From the most advanced supplement company on the planet, Primordial Performance, comes the new Andro Series. Andro Lean is a thermogenic aid that will promote lipolysis and incinerate body fat. Andro Mass creates explosive gains and is highly anabolic. Andro Hard will turn your muscles into granite hard stone while increasing sex drive and maximizing strength. The Andro Series represents the most advanced delivery systems available anywhere. These are non-methylated and completely liver safe and non-toxic. Buy one or stack all of the new Andro Series products today at primordialperformance.com.
Listen strong. It's Superhuman Radio.
I don't know.
Welcome back to Superhuman Radio. We're talking with Dr. Boyd Eaton. We're talking about the current state of paleo nutrition. Clearly, ancestral diets are healthier than the traditional Western diet today. But yet more and more people are still kind of stuck on this notion that we shouldn't be eating meat. I personally, again, I use my critical thinking skills. I look back and I look back hundreds, just more recently than Paleolithic style eaters. I just look back a couple hundred years and I say, you know, saturated fats. I look at some of the research done by Stefansson. I look at some of the research done Dr. Weston A. Price. I look at primitive, more recent but primitive cultures, and we know that saturated fat has been used as an important macronutrient for hundreds and hundreds of years. So I say that heart disease is coming from someplace else. That saturated fat just happens to be the innocent bystander that may be in the room when it's all going on. But okay, so let's talk about something else. Are you familiar? And I didn't ask you this beforehand. So if you're not familiar with her work, then that's fine. But are you familiar with Dr. Cynthia Kenyon from University of California at San Francisco, her lab, and some of the work that they're doing?
No.
Okay, all right. Well, let's move past that.
What kind of work is she doing?
Well, she I can't get her on the show. I've tried to have her on the show numerous times. She's just too busy. She's very, very polite. But it's been intimated to me that she, 16 years ago, she set out to prove that nutrition played no role in longevity and proved exactly the opposite. And she has come up with a validation that the ancestral diet can lead to unknown length of life if adhered to strictly, as you were talking about before, a more aggressive approach. And there's a lot of people out there that are now starting to move to a more aggressive style of paleo where they're actually eating raw meat. We've done shows about this. I've tried it myself. It's not undesirable. I mean, I enjoy raw beef. Many of us have eaten sashimi, so that's a commercial start. Where do you fall in the whole raw meat environment right now?
I have no I'm not at all in favor of raw meat. I think that our ancestors cooked their meat for well over a million years, and that's a form of meat that we're adapted to. It's been pretty well shown by scientific studies that a human being cannot maintain their weight and strength and health by eating exclusively uncooked foods. Now, if you eat raw meat, does that mean you also eat uncooked vegetables and fruits and so forth? If that be the case, there have been substantial studies showing that you just cannot maintain your weight. Now, maybe Dr. Kenyon, is that her name, Kenyon?
Yes, Cynthia Kenyon. Yes. I don't know that she espouses raw meat, but I just know that there's a lot of research being done on more primitive styles of eating right now, and raw meat falls into that range sometimes.
Well, the one benefit that you might get from that as far as longevity is concerned is that when you feed animals insufficiently so that their weight is way down compared to a normal animal of that sort, they do seem to live longer. Now, of course, you pay a hell of a price for that because you're not nearly as competitive. If you're in a laboratory where there's no predators trying to get at you or other, and you're not competing for mates and all that sort of thing, then those factors are taken out of the way. But a person who ate a purely uncooked diet would probably lose enough weight and conceivably over the course of a lifetime would live longer, just in the same way that these calorically restricted animals live.
And are you saying that sheerly because of the bulk of uncooked vegetables and so on?
Well, I'm saying it because we can't digest them as well as you can after they've been cooked.
Gotcha.
So you get more caloric intake from the same piece of meat if it's been cooked than you would if it's not been cooked, and similarly with vegetable foods as well.
Okay, gotcha. Okay. We have a question from a listener. Are you familiar with the writings of Dr. Weston A. Price?
I am.
Okay. Brian Lukey asks, are there any things that are in the doctrine of Dr. Weston A. Price that Dr. Eaton disagrees with, and if so, why? Do you have anything that Price promoted that you look at and go, no, that just doesn't make sense?
You know, while I say I'm familiar with Weston Price and his work and with his grandson, who has started these ancestral health symposia that we now have, I would say that I go along with the basic thesis. I don't know all of the details of his approach. So that what I got from his book was that the people who are living in a traditional lifestyle tend to be healthier than people who are living in a Western lifestyle. And he was one of the very first to document this by means of actual studies. There were people before him who theorized that that would be the case. Rousseau is a classic example.
Right.
But Price was the first one to go around and actually collect photographic evidence that what he said had a scientific basis. And I appreciate him a great deal because of that. I don't know all the specifics of what specific recommendations he made.
Sure, sure. Is there anything exciting and new right now on the horizon that yet further proves that the ancestral diet can actually improve health and longevity that hasn't been discussed, that's maybe just starting to circulate within the hierarchy of the ancestral diet movement?
Well, I don't know what you've discussed on your program, but I do know that at least a few double-blind studies or blinded, truly rigorous investigations are being made comparing a ancestral diet with various other forms of diet, such as the American Heart Association recommendation or the American Diabetes Association recommendations or the Mediterranean diet. These have been compared, and so far the ancestral diet has come out ahead on in each of the tests, in each of the studies that's been performed.
Now,
and one hopes that they'll go on doing more and more of these studies.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And I know that you mentioned Rob Wolf. I know Rob Wolf is working with the municipality in Nevada right now. And with, you know, I think like, policemen and firemen and stuff like that. The municipality is interested in trying their more ancestral diet with these guys who obviously are putting their lives on the line day in and day out. So it's going to be interesting to see what comes from that as well. Where do you stand on grain, wheat, and even corn, for instance? Is this something that is acceptable in an ancestral diet or not? There's a lot of discussion that, well, we found tools that show that we've been eating grain for thousands of years, and other people say grain is the pox on health. What do you think?
Well, it's absolutely true. We've been eating grains for thousands of years. There's no questions about that. My feeling is related to what I said before, that there is a strong form of the paleo dietary approach and there is a weak form. And if you are in good enough shape to use the weak form, that is to say that you don't have any intractable health problems and your biomarkers are in good shape, then whole grain wheat, whole grain cereals and wheat products, whole grain products are acceptable. On the other hand, if you have a health problem that is not responding, and or if your biomarkers are not in good shape, your blood pressure is not good, or your cholesterol is wrong, or things of that sort, then you should go on to the strong form paleo approach, in which case wheats and dairy would be verboten.
And so dairy also, you feel, is something that in the strong form, the more extreme form of paleo, would not be an acceptable food source.
That's right.
Interesting. How about you? Do you use dairy at all in your life?
I do.
Are you a fan of raw unpasteurized milk, or you go the safe route and take pasteurized?
Ordinarily, we have pasteurized milk.
Okay, just curious. Are you following any of the raw milk discussions at this point in time, Dr. Eaton? What's going on out there?
No.
Okay. I know Dr. Cordain also is opposed to dairy, but he, very, very strongly opposed to dairy because of the galactose he claims has some negative effects on the body. So it's it seems like if you really want to do paleo, you've got to sidestep dairy entirely.
Well, as I said, it depends a little bit on your circumstances. If you have... health problems that are not responsive to the weak form paleo and are not responding well to whatever medical interventions are being used, then you surely should try the strong form paleo,
yeah,
in which there would be no dairy nor any grain products.
Right.
On the other hand, if you're doing fairly well, you don't have diabetes or high blood pressure or whatever, and you're getting along pretty well with your health and your biomarkers are in good shape, then you can, in my opinion, you can get along perfectly well with what I call a weak form paleo, in which whole grains and I like the low-fat or non-fat dairy products are what I use.
Okay. Now I noticed that in the media, they still like to poke fun at the paleo movement. There's from time to time, I'll see articles comparing different diets and the paleo style or the hunter-gatherer style or caveman-style diet usually scores low. We've had who I like to affectionately call the Wizard of Oz. Dr. Oz did a show once where he actually had people live in cages at a zoo and fed them a paleo-style diet. And, you know, very, very tongue-in-cheek. But there's a lot of making light about the paleo diet. Do you think that there's this? Why is, I mean, to me, I feel like there's a conspiracy afoot that they don't want people to realize that this ancestral diet works, because people would abandon a lot of different food sources out there that would cause industries to collapse, literally. Do you have any thoughts on why the mainstream media and the medical orthodoxy try to make it laughable, this whole notion?
Well, I don't think the academic world is trying to make it laughable. I think their incentives are different. But I think the other people are trying to sell their program or their cartoon or their column or whatever. And it is cavemen are considered a humorous subject. I mean, they've always been considered sort of a humorous subject, and they are using that to make their comments seem sort of humorous. And, you know, that's the American way. They're cashing in on something that they think will promote their particular point of view, but they really don't say anything one way or the other about the paleo diet because they don't, for the most part, they don't know or understand what we're talking about.
Yeah, just look at the Geico commercials with the cavemen. You're right. Cavemen are funny. There's no doubt about it. All right, we're going to take our last commercial break. When we come back, I want to talk a little bit about iron intake and how the paleo diet fares in this area. We're talking with Dr. Boyd Eaton. We're talking about the state of paleo today. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Amino acids have been studied more than creatine and beta-alanine, and no two amino acids have been shown to independently improve athletic performance better than creatine and beta-alanine. When you join these two ergogenic powerhouses together, you get unparalleled results. And when you bypass the stomach and deliver them right to the bloodstream, you get the best single legal performance-enhancing product bar none. Save 50% off your initial order by using the coupon code CB50. That's CB50. Go to ageforce.com today.
You may not recognize Muscle Gauge Nutrition, but that's because they've been in the background as a private label manufacturer for some of your favorite brands. Now get ready to hear their name a lot as an introductory offer. Get 5 pounds of pure whey protein isolate for as little as $11 a pound and get free shipping too. Each 30-gram scoop contains the requisite amount of leucine to stimulate the anabolic response. Check out these flavors: cake batter, chocolate, cinnamon bun, ice cream sandwich, rocky road, strawberry, vanilla, and unflavored. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Muscle Gauge banner ad and use the coupon code Super. That's SUPER today.
Never before has an anti-estrogen been so powerful. The triazole formula is built on a potent, all-natural aromatase inhibitor called Pizole, which has been shown in clinical trial to be as effective as a leading prescription aromatase inhibitor. Pizole works in concert with the rest of the triazole formula to control estrogen while simultaneously boosting testosterone significantly. In fact, one of triazole's testers had a 120% increase in total testosterone and a 257% increase in free testosterone. Triazole is available at bodybuilding.com, NutriPlanet.com, or where finest supplements are sold. For more information, check out GetDS.com.
If you want to outlast, outmuscle, and outperform your competition with a high-powered, stimulant-free carbohydrate source that has zero sugars, you want Carbolin. Carbolin is the original high-performance fuel that will allow you to load your muscles with glycogen in minutes instead of hours. As a pre-, intra-, and post-training supplement, it will give you a hardness and fullness to your muscles like you've never felt before. As an endurance supplement, Carbolin has been proven to increase VO2 max by 2.8%. If you want fast absorption and sustained energy without bloating or cramping, get Carbolin. Go to AAEFX.com today. Mass Pro Synthogen is unlike any supplement to come before it, both in form and function. Synthogen is the world's first messenger RNA translation accelerator. Messenger RNA is the rate-limiting step in growing new muscle. Synthogen rapidly stimulates protein synthesis on demand, day or night. Synthogen allows you to train harder, longer, stronger, and more frequently than your competition. Synthogen is the absolute fastest drug-free recovery agent available. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Synthogen banner ad to learn more. Mass Pro Synthogen. When you train with it, you'll gain with it.
There are a few products that I believe in the way I believe in CanSee eye drops. I've been using CanSee for 6 months now, and the changes in my vision are nothing short of amazing. My near vision has improved, and I can read small print from 8 inches. My overall vision is clearer, and the glare from oncoming headlights doesn't bother me any longer. Just 1 to 2 drops a day, and the results are visible. You can find CanSee eye drops at wisechoicemedicine.net or call 800-861-4936. That's 800-861-4936. Wisechoicemedicine.net. CanSee eye drops. The name says it all.
Build muscle, burn fat. It's Superhuman Radio.
Welcome back to Superhuman Radio. We're talking with Dr. Boyd Eaton. Interestingly enough, Adele Musa, who is a contributor to the show, just posted on my Facebook that there are two clinical trials at the clinicaltrials.gov website, both of them employing what they're calling a modified paleo diet to reverse type 2 diabetes. These are two randomized controlled trials. Interesting. So I guess people are starting to get the message that an ancestral diet has benefits more so than just for good parlor jokes. Dr. Eaton, I have, through my own research, come to take notice of the accumulation of iron in the body, especially as it relates to men, from our diet. These high levels of iron tend to lend themselves to certain diseases, including cancers. A paleo-style diet, how does it mitigate? Obviously, if you're not eating a lot of red meat, then you're really not getting too much iron in your diet. But if you are eating a lot of red meat, how can we mitigate the accumulation of iron in the body? Is there anything that helps with that?
Well, you're raising a good point. A paleo diet does give more iron, which is particularly more potentially troublesome for men than women, because women are losing blood monthly for the most part, and men are not, so that men are at greater risk. I don't know the answer to that. That's an interesting question which deserves further study.
See,
you know, I'm interested that you're talking so much about diet. You know, when you get into diabetes and so forth, body composition is probably one of the most important factors, and diet certainly plays a role in body composition, but exercise does as well. And if you're looking at a paleo approach to health promotion, it's not exclusively about our nutrition, but it also involves our exercise and other factors as well. But to me, exercise is a very important part of the paleo program.
And I can agree with you there. I mean, this show has its foundation in what we call physical culture. We're strong proponents of physical culture. Tell me about your do you exercise regularly, Dr. Eaton?
When I'm at home, I work out, try to work out 7 days a week. Sometimes things will come up and I don't, but my plan, my goal is to work out 7 days a week. I do 3 days of aerobic exercise, 2 days of upper body resistance exercise, and 2 days of lower body resistance exercise.
That's excellent. That's really, really fantastic. Yes, and it's critical. All of the components are critical in order for health and longevity to occur in the human condition. I agree with you. And you're right. We've been focusing on the nutritional side of this because that seems to be where paleo got its start. But you're right. There is a emerging hunter-gatherer lifestyle information coming out. And we know that working out just once for a half hour in the morning isn't necessarily the best way to achieve optimal health. We're starting to see that sitting for long periods of time actually cause changes, triggers, if you will, in the body, that getting up and moving around maybe for 15-minute sessions two or three times a day can actually amplify the workout you had in the morning. Have you heard about this at all?
Yes. I think the biggest change you can do is to go from no exercise to regular exercise, even if it be a relatively modest amount of exercise that most exercise proponents would poo-poo and say that's not enough to do. Going from something to nothing is the proportionately biggest change a person can make.
Right.
Beyond that, going from something to more up to a certain point is additionally helpful. You can, in my opinion, go beyond the levels of paleo. Our top athletes now, our top endurance athletes, top strength athletes, are way beyond the average Stone Ager, I can assure you. But there is a happy medium, which is way above what most Americans and most people around the world are doing.
What
you have to do is go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, which lends me to this statement that I wanted to make, because when we talk about paleo, whatever, and then I listen to the commercials that air on my show, I think to myself, people must be saying to themselves, Carl, you talk about promoting paleo, ancestral diets and so on, but then you've got this supplement that lowers estrogen. You've got this one for your eyes and so on. And it's important to understand that the advantage that we have today over our Paleolithic ancestors is that we have a lot more variables available to us to take us even further than they could have gone on their own. For instance, we talk about iron accumulation. I started promoting on my show several months ago, especially for men, that men need to start giving blood every couple months to reduce that the load of metals in the body, toxins as well, but especially iron, because iron is associated with premature aging of the cell, with cancers, with a variety of different disorders. And it's very simple. You know what? You're helping somebody else. Go to the American Red Cross once every 2 months, give a pint of blood. So that you know, because we're a closed system. It's like, think of your radiator. If you never flushed your radiator out for 50 years, you know what's in there? Gunk. So what I'm saying is, I'm not saying, no, live like a caveman. I'm saying take what we learned from the caveman and use it along with everything else that we have. We know that there's certain drugs out there that are not designed to be part of the pharmaceutical agenda that you get, that really do rescue you and save you and allow you to turn your life around. And then you get off of them. So I say use everything that you can.
I think that makes so much sense. I mean, you don't want to, as you said earlier, throw the baby out with the bathwater. We have many advances that help us. For example, if you were a Stone Ager and you had a compound fracture, you were dead. Now we can treat a compound fracture, and you may have some residual impairment to some extent, but you're not dead. Similarly, if you were a pregnant Stone Ager and you had a transverse lie. Do you know what a transverse lie is? It's a baby going horizontally rather than up and down.
Okay.
You were dead, and the baby was dead. If you had a penetrating chest wound, you were dead almost all the time. All of these things now we can take care of, and we shouldn't bunk them. I mean, the most common cause of death amongst older Stone Agers was infectious disease, just as it has been up until the early part of the 20th century. But we now can mitigate most cases of infectious disease using the appropriate antibiotics. So we have many things in our society now that are immensely helpful and healthful. And we certainly don't want to poo-poo those. We want to use those. But we can use them in conjunction with a paleo health program and maximize the benefit of both.
Interestingly, and this is the nature of this show. Adele Musa, who listens to the show from Munster, Germany, and is a contributor to the show, posted on my Facebook wall seconds ago. Apparently, there is a study out there that shows that dietary milk protein supplementation could at least partly prevent the occurrence of deleterious effects to tissue induced by iron overload. And I put a study up there from the NIH.gov.
Mm-hmm.
So that's interesting. That comes kind of full circle to the whole dairy thing there. I've got to read that study. I haven't read it yet. But anyway, he's got a great blog called Supversity, SUPPVERSITY.com. And he just publishes some great stuff up there. But anyway, thank you for that, Adele. Okay, so what's going on with you personally right now, Dr. Eaton? Do you have any upcoming seminars, things that people can participate in to learn more about this wonderful lifestyle that begets health and longevity? Oh, okay. We're going to get him back on, so sit tight just for 1 second. Hold on. I want to finish this interview with him. I want him to be able to plug. Hold on. Let's see here. Okay. Here's some music. Hold on. Yeah. Let's listen to a little Rick James for a second.
It's wicked, let's begin. Party on, party people, let me hear some noise. DC's in the house, jump, jump, rejoice. There's a party over here, a party over there. Wave your hands in the air, shake the dairy, yeah. Please, three,
get. Okay. Just when I was allowing you to plug what you've got coming up, I dropped the line again. So that this is the wonders of technology. You see, cavemen didn't have these problems, Dr. Eaton. But then again, they didn't have radio shows either, did they? What happened? Boy, I'm going to have to edit the heck out of this show today. Okay, hold on. Are you there, Dr. Eaton?
I am.
Okay, gosh, I'm going to have to just edit some of the show today. That's no problem. But anyway, what I was saying was, do you have any upcoming events, any upcoming seminars?
Oh, yes. In August, we're going to have the second annual Ancestral Health Symposium at Harvard. And we're all very excited about this. It's, I think, the 8th, 9th, and 10th or something of that sort. And you can look it up on the web under Ancestral Health Symposium. And it's already overbooked, but at least as far as speakers are concerned, and I'm not sure about the attendance. The first one in at UCLA last summer was heavily oversubscribed. There are people paying hundreds of dollars to get a ticket, but I don't know what the situation is for this one. Because of that, they may have more room set up for it.
Now, who actually organizes these symposiums?
There's a group called the Ancestral Health Society, and they do it. It is a group of people who are very interested in this sort of thing, and it's a non-profit organization, and it's there to get the views of people ranging from top academic authorities to people who have no higher degree whatsoever, but who have a lot of personal experience and who can give some evidence that might be considered anecdotal, but which is nevertheless quite convincing when you put half a dozen people in a row telling the story, their own personal story, and the story of people that they work with in their jobs. It's a very convincing meeting. It is well worth attending if you're able to get to Boston in August.
Yeah, I'm definitely going to look into it. You know, which leads me to one final question, and I kind of probably should have asked this earlier, but it just dawned on me. There's a lot going on with autism and autism spectrum disorder, and I suspect that there's a lot more to it than one single thing that's occurring. Is there any research being done or any anecdotal information? Because I have anecdotal information. I do shows called Muscle Saves Lives, where people, through exercise and dietary changes, rid themselves of diseases that they would have otherwise had to have lived with, like lupus, ulcerative colitis, IBS, and so on, even cancers. And we know that there's a dietary effect. We know that there's an effect of exercise and so on. Anything going on in the area of ancestral diets and autism spectrum disorder?
Not that I know of. I think the things that you mentioned, especially in autoimmune diseases and allergic conditions, there's a tremendous scope for the paleo health program to help in those areas. It may also be true for autism, but if there is, I don't know anything about
it. Okay. All right. Well, that's fine. All right. Well, so there you go. So you will be speaking at the Ancestral Health Symposium at Harvard, I take it?
Yes.
Oh, that's going to be excellent. A lot of fun. Well, listen, Dr. Eaton, I want to thank you for making time to come on Supreme Radio and talk today.
Yeah, well, thank you, because people like yourself are the ones who are getting this information out to the public in a way that otherwise might not happen, and you deserve a lot of credit for advancing this idea and promoting it.
Thank you so much, Dr. Eaton. You have a great day.
Thank you, sir. Okay. Bye-bye.
Hi, right, so there you have it. Dr. Eaton has chimed in on his opinion of the paleo movement, where it is, where it started. Obviously, it started with him. I want to thank everybody for listening today. Sorry for the technical difficulties. I promise you the podcast won't have those problems in it. See you tomorrow.
spit that out right now. This is the Superhuman Channel,